to Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Beale the Bell Lost Souls Podcast. I'm joined tonight by Ricky Addington.
Making overtime pay.
And Adam Camilleri.
Barely making pay.
These guys are referencing, we just did a live stream on YouTube and Twitch. I don't know if that's up for view after the fact or not, but we just kind of an experiment to go live before we recorded the show. And I think
we'll figure
fun.
Out technology. Yeah, one day.
I had a good time.
Hey, you've got a teenager, right? Can't you just ask him how it works?
Yes. How can I use my printer?
Yeah, because you're getting up there in years. So, like, you're falling in that valley where you don't understand how technology works anymore.
That may be it. we will get this all figured out. But yeah, thanks for everybody's patience and hanging in there. And Ricky and Adam, thank you guys for jumping in. I think we're going to do it again next week and just see where it goes.
Well, I mean, it cuts into my very busy schedule of not going to school and having nothing else to do.
I went to the shops yesterday to buy food, and that was the first time I'd used my car in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Did it feel weird? Did it feel weird going out? I've only been out.
Really weird.
I've left the house twice now in the past, I guess, 3 weeks. And I was on the road that I drive, you know, or drove every day, and everything felt weird. Like everything just was so uncomfortable. I think I forgot how to drive or something. I don't know.
On this episode, I've got a segment to introduce with Matt Weeks from Adepticon. He tells us about little stuff they went through, like leading up to the decision to cancel, where they're going from here, and also some response from the community that they've received. And it's a neat chat. It's always fun talking to Matthias and, you know, what he's up to. We talk about some games, talk about some other stuff, and, you know, I think you're going to want to tune in. Things are changing.
And no one knows when it's going to end. Like, there is no definitive end time for this. No one has any clue what's happening or when or how. Like, we're having, like, I think the fresh estimations or the optimistic ones is June. We're going to see an end to this stuff. But look, who knows? This could be going on for the rest of the year.
Yeah, well,
forever.
Well, just, you know, well, certainly not going to be like that. But, you know, hopefully everybody keeps focused, use the time to work on some projects. Maybe, you know, what I found that my commute time, you know, I'm still working full days, but I'm treating that commute time as like found hours, man. I've been able to finish a couple of projects. I finished the Goliaths, the actual figures. I'm working on a Sump Croc this weekend. I just got that. Picked it up today, or didn't pick it up, got it today.
How big is that, Paul?
It's on a 50 mil base, I think.
Is it an oval or a circle?
It's a circle. I think, a Centurion base, but it's not very tall, but it's a long, kind of wide thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
I think it's a crazy good model.
Yeah. It's one of those things that I could not have it, you know, once chose to play Goliath. That's actually why I chose to play
the most important. The most important part here, Paul, is it's Necromunda, and Necromunda is the best.
So using this time, talking about, you know, I'm finished, the figures finished, the gang members going to finish, do the Sum Croc this weekend. I painted some figures for a buddy of mine. You know, it's one of the best guy. He doesn't care how I paint them, so I get to do whatever I want. But they were Star Wars Legions figures.
Nice.
Oh, wait, I saw a picture of it. Right? The super battle droids or whatever they are?
The B2 battle droids. I did some B2.
Dude, those look good.
I mean, they look fine, but they're not GW models, you know? It's a big difference. It's a different kind of game.
It's a huge difference. The game is super different. I'm going to be honest. I hated that game when I first started. The first time I tried it, I played two games, and I put it away for Lord knows how long. And then my sons, they identify with Star Wars way more than they identify with the Warhammer universe, right? So they were getting excited about, like, playing it again. And we got some of the clone army and the droid army and played a game using those. And, dude, there's a lot to that game that I enjoyed. So I'm kind of into it now. So,
well, I mean, let me tell you, contrast paints on the B1 battle, whatever, the Roger Rogers. Perfectly. I mean, just did
Roger Rogers.
Yeah, what it was supposed to do. I mixed a little of the skeleton horde with a little one of the other, like, really dark browns. I think it was like 3 skeleton hordes to like half a brush of the really dark brown, and it worked absolutely perfect on those guys.
Okay, I'm gonna have my son do that then.
I mean, I'm talking like just not with no effort at all, worked exactly like
just,
Yeah.
Just prime it and contrast it.
Yep. And then contrast black on the guns and you are, boom, you put a little squad mark on and you are done.
Too easy.
Yeah. I mean, they look good. I mean, I'm proud of the result, but it was just that quick.
Yeah. That's perfect. I haven't even looked at painting my clone army because I've got so many Warhammer models. I just told myself, I was like, boys, y'all just better be planning on playing with gray plastic for a while on these because I'm not getting to it. So
I'm telling you, I'm trying to
there's the understanding.
Yeah. Trying to convert this home time, this extra home time into some extra hobby time. You know, really enjoyed that work. You know, these doing the Necromunda gang was a really nice change. You know, I used some different colors. I've talked about it before, but having them all come together, different poses, different figures, a nice kind of palate cleanser to then get me on.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing next, but you know, it was fun. It's fun to do.
Well, I mean, if you're bored, I got some stuff you can paint.
I got models, you know, probably some scenery and stuff. And, you know, looking forward to, you know, to getting some of the neat things while, you know, I've got now since, you know, I've got 4,000 points of Blood Angels painted. Of current, but like meta ripe Blood Angels.
Of course, I have to make that the new tournament standard so you can use them all.
4,000.
You heard it here, folks. The Forza Narrative 4K tournament.
Oof. Well, speaking of competitive and tournaments, you know, I wrote an article about Space Wolves where I kind of give an example of what you could do in a melee army, but then I advocate for a gunline army. And some of the comments were, well, Paul, we don't like your idea that you should force the Space Wolves to be a gunline army.
Nobody's forcing them.
Well, you know,
it's where they're good.
In their minds, maybe that they are, you know, more viable as a gunline army, but that's not what they want to play. What they're really telling me is, I don't want to do it the way you said it. Or they just feel like that is the slant and they prefer the slant to be the other way. And then somebody else came in and said, well, you know, for me, the Space Wolves are a midfield controller. Like they are supposed to be there in the mid-range being a jack of all trades.
That's a fun place to be, though. Honestly, for me, that's a fun kind of army to play is be there in the midfield because you're going to have those opportunities to charge. You're going to have the tools to push your opponent back, but also control your backfield and stuff. So being an army that excels there in the midfield, that's pretty fun, if you ask me.
You could almost liken them to a weird kind of Necron stylist. Necrons is a mid-range army as well, but they don't have anywhere near the, I guess, just the explosive combat potential, but they do probably have better shooting if you look at it, like things like destroyers. There's no real destroyer equivalent or Doomsday Arc equivalent for Space Wolves that's kind of worth the points. I mean, you could make an argument that they do have repulsor executioners now, but still, you could liken them to a different kind of Necron style army. Necrons are mid-range explosive firepower list. They do have some good melee units, but that's not what they're known for. They're known for their shooting. They're known for their Dakar, their Tesla, their Gauss, their, you know, we have a tool to hurt everything kind of thing. Whereas Space Wolves are kind of sitting in this weird niche where I can't tell how good they are, if you know what I mean. I haven't played with them yet. Naturally, with the shutdowns and all the tournaments going away, I haven't had a chance to play against a new Space Wolves. So this is all coming from pure speculation. So please forgive me if I'm way off the mark. Yeah, I don't quite understand what they do that's going to scare me, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. It feels like they're going to be predictable. They're scary, predictable. Like they're potent. They'll kick your teeth in, given the slightest opportunity. But I don't see them doing anything that I feel like is going to catch me off guard. Which is what I always felt like with Space Marines. I was like, oh, okay, I think I know what these guys do. Oh my God, I didn't know they could do that.
Well, even going back to Iron Hands, there was no surprises, but their tricks were good. And I think the Space Wolves are going to have some of that resurgence of their tricks are going to be good. And things that weren't that great before or seemed really expensive, you know, or something you wouldn't invest in are going to rise to being good. Like, what is it? The Cloaked by Storms or whatever, which is the 3 command point stratagem that gives everything within a certain radius neg 1 to hit. You know, and I theorize that other armies spend 2 CP just to do that for one unit. And the Space Wolves get that opportunity to do it for all units around them. And you're not penalized for having everybody in a clump. Like, even if you do go and choke the midfield and put most of your units there, you're maximizing the use of that 3 CP. And then you've got the resiliency of being a Marine on top of it.
I mean, Dark Angels can get -1, but let's be honest, the Dark Shroud gets blown up off the table like turn one, so it doesn't really matter.
This is coming
so
from I'll take a character. That. This is coming from things that exactly. are not necessarily easily targetable.
Yeah. You can hide it much easier. So it might actually see some play.
I feel like I'm just sitting here thinking about the things we talk about a lot on this show. And I feel like no one jumped down my throat on this, but I've got the feeling we don't talk about Xenos armies enough.
What are those? What is
that? I don't even know what they are. I hear they exist. I've never heard of them though.
I've been low key bringing my orcs out again. I don't want to say it because I know I disappointed some folks when I was painting the orcs originally. I had to stop painting them to work on the Adepticon army for last year. I had to paint 4,000 points in like 3 months, and so that puts a kind of a crimp in your step when you're staring down the barrel of painting 90 boys. Like, ugh, I want to do this, and I have a really nice orc skin recipe for paint.
I think you've mentioned this, but yeah, I think I remember you talking about this, and I was getting really excited because painting orc skin is both the biggest pleasure and biggest pain you'll have playing that army. if you can find a way to enjoy painting orc skin, you're gonna have a great time. If it's
well, that's it. You take
so that's the trick. Yeah, paint one orc, paint the skin. If you hate it, do not go orcs.
Yes, exactly right.
Pre-contrast, right? I mean, if you get your dry brush just to like super super light, then it almost looks like a poor man's edge highlight, and then you get to move on to the other stuff. I think you have to choose: do you want to paint the fatigues fast, or do you want to paint the skin fast? And whatever you find, you know, less tedious is how you pick how you're going to do your orcs.
Yeah, that's a good call.
On the topic of orcs. The last two tournaments I went to before the ridiculousness, I got my teeth kicked in by orcs in both of these tournaments. And granted, I did not take like super strong lists, and I was probably mid-table at best in some of these. What's the guy with the gun?
The Big Mac with the shock attack?
Big Mac? Yes, that. It's the first time I've played against it in 8th edition. And in one shot, so the guy... Turn one takes a shot against my repulsor executioner. The words out of his mouth did not help in any way when he said, "Oh my God, that's never happened." And
so things you don't want to hear.
Repulsor executioner came off the table, top of turn one, real quick. And my gosh, like, what was it? He had the relic one or whatever it is. He had like the relic shock attack gun or whatever it was that dealt. It was something like 30 wounds or something that it ended up doing. I can't even remember, but it was it maxed out everything and caused all that extra damage. I can't even remember how many wounds he did, but I lost that repulsor right off the bat, turn one. I said, "Are you serious that it does that?" He goes, "If it makes you feel any better, it hasn't done that the whole tournament." I said, "Well, no, that makes me feel worse.
Feel worse."
Why did it happen to me? I had one repulsor executioner in that list, and I moved it once the entire tournament. I moved it. I took a turn with it once. That thing got shot off the table every game, and so I was so disheartened by repulsors at the end of that tournament. The orcs were fun to play against. They feel the two lists I've played against recently, they were very orky lists, right? They had tons of boys in there, the big mechs, and then the what are the big dreadnought things? Is it a mecha dread?
The you talking about the Forge World ones? That's a mecha dread, but they've got the Morkanauts and the Gorkanauts. Which
the Mechadred.
The plus. Okay.
Yeah. The last tournament I went to, I played a guy. He had two of those that had like the, what, he's got like a rocket booster on the back of it or something.
Ricky is not an orc specialist.
No. I can't tell you the names of any of this stuff, but that thing was fast and the guns on it were bonkers good. I don't even play orcs. I immediately was like looking up how to build a list with these in it.
I can't retain all the information. My money where my mouth is. When Psychic Awakening hit, and I talked, you know, you could tell I'm fascinated with the Mega Knobs. And I had a few of them before. I didn't have enough to like make the 20 or 30 that we theorized might be a good list before. But I said, staying true to what I was talking about, I've actually bought a squad of Mega Knobs from every person that I know that owns a game store. in the last couple of weeks. And so now I've got enough Mechan Hubs.
How many do you have?
I think I have 20 right now, or 21, whatever. You know, they come in packs of three. So I think I'm set. So again, I'm not kidding. I have been working on the orcs and something that, you know, what can I do right now? I don't know that I'm ready to make that plunge into the boys, but I'm going to have some Mechan Hubs pretty soon. Like a couple of, at least one solid squad of them.
I'm a fan of Mechan Hubs. I think they're fantastic.
I'm not sure which way to go, though, with the power claws of the kill saws. I think the kill saws might have a little bit of validity.
I can tell you I've played against guys who use one brick of 10, and they put six kill saws in it. And I feel like I remember them saying that's the right number to go straight through a knight in one turn. I don't quote me on that.
Just six.
I feel like I remember that's what they said.
That feels good.
Then do that. Unit of 10. Do that. That sounds good. Do that.
That feels right. I mean, you could look. Yeah. I don't have to run the numbers. You just got to believe in the power of Mork and Gork. So maybe that is the number. And if that is what the green hand has decided, then that's what we'll do. Nobody tell me the odds.
From a looks perspective, which is the most important part, I think the power claws look cooler.
No, it's hard to beat the aesthetic of a power claw on an orc. Yes.
Yeah.
But the kill saws don't look bad. I mean, get them all some cool.
No, they look cool. I like that power claw.
Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to decide now. Do I go custom clan? Do I, you know, go with the, I've got, my, right now it's built, it's a cross between Death Skulls and Evil Suns. Is what, you know, of course that's what I was building because that was the power build originally. But I don't know what the right thing to do is right now. I'm just going to continue on with the color scheme because I like the way the colors look, the way the contrast from the armor and the flesh tone. So I'm going with that, but I don't know what rules I'm going to use.
I think it's horses for courses. I think there's a lot of I don't think there's the wrong way to paint orcs. I don't think there is. It's just fine whichever way you feel like mowing it down. I do prefer my orcs to have a green skin. I'll just say that. Apart from that, though, I think they're like one of the best clean canvas armies you can paint. You can just be like, I don't care whatever color goes. Do you guys watch Tabletop Tactics?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course.
They've got an orc army in their studio orc army that's green. They've got green skin, and then the green is one of the primary colors of their armor. And I would have told you that is a horrible, horrible idea. Up until about a month ago when I saw this army. And I look at it, I'm like, that actually kind of works. It's actually kind of fine. Yeah, but literally a month ago, I would have been like, no, that's the only mistake you can make. And now, no, I don't think there are any mistakes. Just do whatever you want.
Well, what I like is you can mess with the weathering or the iconic, the icons or checkerboards, stripes. You can do really whatever you want, and then no one can tell you that you're wrong, like, to your point.
Well, I think no one, firstly, this is Adam's broad generalist statement for tonight's episode. Never tell someone else they're wrong in your hobby.
Like, clan is supposed to do. Yes, I agree. You never hobby shame.
Never. Who cares? If they're doing something that they love and they're enjoying doing it, you should ask them, did you enjoy painting those? Like, internally you're screaming and you're like, did you enjoy painting that army? And are you happy with it? And they say yes. And you go, I'm not happy for you too. And everything else that I might have said, could have said, wanted to say, I'm going to shut up. Doesn't matter. It's irrelevant.
That's what the world needs right now. Everyone just celebrating hobby.
Exactly. Yeah, ELE.
Everybody
All these politicians doing their heads in, they just need a bit of hobby, you know? Sort it. Then they'll get their head in the game and, you know, we'll sort this whole COVID thing out in a fortnight.
It is.
You think that's it? Because they don't paint enough miniatures is why. It's why we haven't figured this out.
We talk about
that's why we're in this mess.
Things that are slippery slopes or things that have a threshold of what is acceptable and what is not. But if someone has put the effort into their army, I do agree it is always good. That's why, you know, we discuss and talk about accountability groups or whatever. It's not about necessarily, you know, objectively how good it looks. It's about putting the effort and getting it on the table. In something that you're proud of.
Exactly. It's all you need, man. It's pretty simple when you boil it down to it. Like, are you getting enjoyment and happiness out of the product and the experience? If it's a yes, then good for you. That is it. That is all that really matters.
But we can look at things, though, and we have things in our mind of how things are supposed to look, right? I mean, that's it. I mean, like, when I'm painting First Company Blood Angels, their helmets are supposed to be a certain way. You know, in the pictures, right? In the art.
Mm.
Helmets are a certain way. Shoulder pads are a certain way or whatever. And so we have these, like, uniforms or whatever that go on stuff. What I'm saying about orcs, and to your to your point, though, they are almost basically a clean canvas if you've got the colors in the right place. But the colors are almost just like communication of what your rules are to your opponent.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, that's the only where I would start to kind of hedge my thoughts on it, is that you are communicating what the rules are with certain things. But all the stuff on there with, like, do I paint checkerboard? Do I paint hazard stripes? Do I put gore or weathering on it? It's just whatever you're feeling.
Well, that's the fun thing. If you're, you know, if you're in, like, my boat, like, I just space out after so long. Like, if I have to paint more than five guys the same scheme, I get burnt out. Obviously, I'm a Space Marine player, which is a terrible choice if you think about it, because it's all the same, right? But, like, you know, orcs, you can do whatever you want. You can paint 30 dudes exactly the same and then paint that 31st dude just whatever you want. It still works because it's orcs. So that's the thing. It's like you've got a fresh palette every time, and you're not beholden to the rules of what your army is supposed to look like, because your army is supposed to look like, you know, you climbed out of a scrap heap.
You know what orcs have that many 40K armies do not have? Silly hats. Yeah, silly hats.
They do. They have some fun, like pirate hats.
Yeah, when you can throw a silly hat on a model or in a unit, you break up that monotony like nobody's business.
Yeah, go with that.
There's only a couple of armies you can get away with painting every model in a unit completely different. I think it's orcs and harlequins.
Yeah.
Like harlequins, you could legitimately paint every single model in the unit differently, and it would still be exactly thematic to what harlequins are. And orcs, you could do exactly the same. And you're like, oh, why are they different? I'm like, because they want to be. I'm just interpreting what the orcs want them to be. Yeah.
But with these Meganobs, big, beefy models that you can make fearsome. I mean, they look like they're all a bunch of tanks.
Assault on Black Reach. That was the 5th edition starter set?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So I remember walking into a G-dub when I was the old 13 or 14. I started playing when I was about 11. When 2nd edition was like, I think I was 8 or 9. I got the 2nd edition starter kit. But then I came back for about maybe a couple of months in early high school and played. And I remember I walked into a G-dub. And you remember when G-dub would do the conglomerate games? Like, you're playing this unit, you're playing this unit, you're playing this unit. I was playing the truck with the Meganobs in the Assault of Black Reach scenario.
All the power.
And my Meganobs just dumpstered the entire Ultramarines army. I was just like, you're all wrecked. It was fantastic. and those are the old metal ones. And are they smaller? I feel like they'll be less bulky than the ones we got now.
Tad bit smaller, but they were also built to like go on 25 millimeter bases or something, I think.
Yeah, exactly right. Mind you, one of those Meganobs you could actually wield as a weapon. Like, if you're worried of people like... Yeah, you worried about someone like creeping up to you at an ATM? Yeah, just get your Meganob out of your pocket and be like, hold on, buddy, back up.
It's like four rolls of quarters. Like, I mean, not that you know what those are.
Right. Yeah. We had the same things with like 20 cent and 50 cent pieces. But yeah, you'll just knock someone right out of that bad boy. Only thing more fearsome than that was the old OG Dreadnought or Great Unclean One. The Great Unclean One, I swear, is a WMD these days. You'll take out a car. You throw that into a car's radiator, that thing's cooked.
Nice. Let's take a break. We'll come back with Matthias, then we'll come back and close out with us. Hang in there, guys.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, welcome to a very special community spotlight segment. I'm Paul, your host. I'm joined this evening by Matthias Weeks.
Hey Paul, how's it going?
Yo man, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
People are going to recognize your name from Adepticon.
That's right.
So, you know, Adepticon would have been, last weekend?
Yeah.
It feels like forever ago now.
I know. Yeah, I mean, even that weekend when it was supposed to be happening, all of a sudden I looked and it was Sunday and I was like, it's over with already. It would have been over with, you know. It felt weird.
Well, we truly as a community kind of mourned not being able to take part in it this year. But I think a lot of people are already anxious for next year. Are you guys going to be back? Tell me you're going to be back.
Oh, 100%. Yep. I mean, we have no question that we'll be back. You know, initially when things first started coming to light, you know, when we were trying to make a decision, like trying to figure out how bad this was going to be and kind of riding that edge between like, you know, financial ruin and then also trying to do things, you know, once it became morally important to do the right thing, right? Like, mm-hmm. You know, we took a look at everything as a whole and whether or not we could, you know, survive a cancellation from, you know, just a pure cancellation standpoint, and still make it out on the other side. And it was dicey for a while, for sure. And, you know, it's probably no surprise that it's, you know, a pretty big hit for us. But at the same time, you know, we had to do what we had to do. Mm-hmm. And we were up against several ticking clocks at that point. It was probably the most frustrating 72 hours of my life. So
I bet, man. I mean, really, there was, at the time you guys made the call, there was a lot of indecision, a lot of confusion in the nation, right? I mean, other countries, sure, were, you know, reacting in this in their own way. But in our nation, there was all of this. I mean, it's still kind of weird, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You didn't have perfect information to make a call with.
No, and, you know, we were right at that first kind of wave of event cancellations where we had to make a decision, and we were looking at, you know, okay, well, what are other events similar to us, like Gamma or GaryCon or whatever, that were happening around the same time doing? You know, simultaneously, you had large organizations, NBA and several other major sports, and South by Southwest and Emerald City Comic Con were all canceling. And, you know, it was pretty obvious the way that the writing was on the wall of where this was going.
Yep.
You know, so there was a day where, after some, you know, very frustrating conversations with the venue and things like that, where I came home and I was so exhausted, and I laid down and I just felt that pit in my stomach, and I sat with it for a minute and I was like, oh my God, that's heartbreak. Like, I don't think I've really truly felt that in like 20 years, you know, I was just heartbroken, because at that point in time, I realized, like, well, this has to be this way. You know, there's no options for us anymore. And we have to try to do this, you know, in the best way possible, get the news out as quickly as possible to all of our attendees, try to salvage the convention simultaneously. Like, there was just a lot of things in the air, like in those 72 hours. And we were sadly getting some resistance from certain parts of people that were involved in the decision-making process. So it was difficult. And, but, you know, at the end of the day, we absolutely did what was right. We were backed up by the governor of Illinois a short 4 hours or so after we made the official call to the hotel. And that, you know, of course, helped our cause considerably with them. And really, at the end of the day, is going to, you know, allow Adepticon to survive and continue on.
Well, I mean, I applaud your decision. I mean, it's easy for us to sit here and talk about it's the right thing to do now. But, you know, this is after, sure, things have unfolded. It was a very difficult decision. I recognize it. I know it, you know, with us, you know, my family, my team, you know, that we go to Adepticon with, not knowing what to do was almost great that you took that decision out of our hands.
Yeah, I felt like we had to. I mean, there was a lot, you know, so, I mean, like, the week leading up to that, it was just a constant barrage. I mean, from some people were being like, you have to cancel this, you can't go through with this, to other people like saying, like, well, what if we had people sign waivers? And, like, you know, like, right. So you had people coming at it from all angles, like, how can we still make this happen but still be safe? You can't do this. You can't. You know, and like, so, I mean, it was just a lot of that, as well as people just being like, hey, I'm about to travel, or I have a Airbnb booked, should I cancel it? Mm-hmm. You know, a ton of that coming at us, you know, in that week or 2 weeks up to the decision. And, you know, so, like, we had to make that call, and, you know, we wanted to do it as quickly as possible. But, you know, you run into that issue where if you do it too quickly, then, like, legally, you're going to get in trouble. So, like, we had to just figure out exactly where we fit in that. And at the end of the day, if we're going to have to cancel, it seems weird to say, but it feels like we got best case scenario in terms of canceling a major event like that.
Right.
Hotel waived all of the one night non-refundable deposits. They worked with us to roll deposits forward to the following year. And, you know, so while it's still a considerable financial strike to us, there are ways forward for us. The community's been fantastic. You know, lots of people have donated the registration fees to the event, see the event forward. We've worked with a lot of the exhibitors and the sponsors for the event, who give product for swag bags and prize support and things like that, who have generously allowed us to give that stuff away still. So we're going to be able to send out swag bags to VIG and premium swag bag, badge upgrade holders, as well as, you know, all the merchandise we had produced that bears the 2020 year. So the convention that never was now. and all of that. So in the process right now of wrapping up the refund and credit surveys and getting those, processed. Those, of course, take, like any credit card transaction, they're going to take, 5 to 7 business days to resolve. So we're getting that wrapped up. And once we do that, then we're going to go and we can gather, in appropriate numbers to assemble all of that stuff and box all that stuff up and get all that stuff out the door. We'll move into, essentially our warehouse phase where, we'll be shipping a lot of stuff out to people, including, the Games Workshop show models, which at this point, who knows when those are going to show up again. several other great things that were part of both the bags, as well as the t-shirts and the pub glasses and the dice and the challenge coins and all that kind of good stuff that we already had manufactured. And then, so we'll get all that out the door which we have to, because right now I think we have maybe 2 semi trailers packed with stuff that can't go anywhere. So,
I was one of the people that donated my entire badge purchase and everything without wanting to receive anything. So if there's a way I can still purchase something, I bet there's some people in my situation as well. So if that comes about, if it's not too much of a hassle, I'm sure people want to know.
Yeah, well, we absolutely appreciate that, Paul. And we'll be putting up eventually Shopify store or something like that, where we'll be having the leftover merchandise from the 2020 event. So hoodies are probably the best hoodies we've ever produced. And I've got 44 boxes of them sitting in my garage, and it just makes me sad that, they're not on people's backs. And so we'll be trying to get rid of some of that stuff to help raise some money. There are some very, very, very preliminary talks about us doing a kind of smaller, focused, kind of recovery event in the fall. Now, this would be, nowhere near the scale of an Adepticon. It would be, kind of think more like Grand Tournament of old style, very limited event slate, couple of teachers maybe come in, maybe do some 40K Marvel Crisis Protocol, whatever, right? And just kind of do it, maybe in lieu of kind of like what we would typically have had a staff party at the end of the summer, the beginning of the fall, but actually make it kind of into a little event where we can get people back together. Hopefully the world's, of course, back in one piece by that point.
I mean, things are real still touch and go right now. We don't know.
Sure.
We have all these hopes and expectations that things are going to be back to normal then. And, that's all we can do is hope for the best.
Right. And, at this point, the big summer events are starting to come up to having to make that call, right? Your Origins, your Gen Cons, and, they're going to see which way, the wind blows for them, because, they'll be big indicators about, how we move into the fall. And, we had initially looked at potentially rescheduling, but it was still, like you said, very touch and go. And, if people do end up rescheduling, that fall is going to be insanely busy.
Busy.
So, and part of me is like, the way things have kind of settled throughout particularly major wargaming events in this country is there's kind of one nice major event kind of sit in each quarter of the year. You got your R event, you got the LVO, you got Nova, you got Wargames Con, whatever. And we don't really sit on top of each other. That's worked really well, I think, over the years. So the other thing I don't want to do is necessarily try to cram in an Adepticon in the fall and be on top of one of those other events, So
I'm sure they appreciate that.
Yeah.
But that's part of what makes this community go around, is us all being cognizant of that kind of stuff, man. So, how you been keeping yourself busy outside of all this?
I got, we've been working from home. I think this is our 4th week now from work. Kids been out of school for about as long. So, I work in IT. That's my real job. So for the first 2 weeks, I had about 10 times the amount of work on a daily basis. So that
getting
was
people set up on their home networks and stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like lots of people who have never even taken a laptop home suddenly are having to, remote in and multi-factor and all that sort of stuff. So, I had a couple of crazy weeks there. I was pulling my hair out, add to that the convention cancellation and fallout, and 2 kids that generally are good for about 15 minutes together are now spending 15 weeks or more together. So it's been interesting. My wife's been working from home, and we've just been doing what we can do. Everybody's healthy, but you're a little stir crazy. And we adopted a dog right at the beginning of this, so we figured we're gonna be home for at least 3 weeks, so perfect time, and that keeps the kids marginally busy.
Oh, that's smart if you're going to do it, and you're going to, now you get the, you're on potty training duty
Well, he's already 5 and extremely well trained, so he's easy integration, and he'll be really bummed when we go back to work, I'm sure. But and then other than that,
those memes of cats are like they want to know when their owners are going back to work.
Yeah, the fat cat leaning back saying something like, "Karen, we need to talk about why you're in my house all the time." Yeah, that's my favorite. And then other than that, you know, the other meme, right, is the Morgan Freeman one where it's like, "Oh, cool, I'm quarantined for 4 weeks. I'm going to paint all my miniatures." You know, in reality, he did not paint all of his miniatures. But
every time we've spoken, we talked about your shadows over Brimstone.
Yeah, still working on that. That's been
How many figures have you completed since the last time we talked?
I'm going to hit 400 here in the next few days. So about 21 shy right now. So any day now, I'll hit 400. And that's pretty close to complete. I can always find something more to do, though. So I've been painting a lot of that. My 5-year-old son and I sat down and painted one of those WizKids Optimus Primes.
Yeah.
28mm Optimus Prime. That was a lot of fun. So, you know, just been painting. I haven't really watched much TV at all. I've just been painting and working for the most part and playing fetch with the dogs. And
my wife and I have used this as an excuse to catch up on some shows, you know, DVR things like everybody else. And then just kind of sitting there in the backlog. And although, I mean, you know, I mean, again, I mentioned this before on the other shows, but like, you know, our hobbies are really well suited. She's into like, she has several indoor hobbies. You know, we got video games. Final Fantasy VII Remake is coming out soon. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you played that back in the day.
It's been ages since. I mean, video games and me kind of burnt out after like World of Warcraft, you know. I've just never been able to come back around. I think at the end of World of Warcraft, I felt really guilty about neglecting tabletop gaming so much during that period of my life that I came back to tabletop gaming and, you know, whether it was RPGs, board games, miniature games, whatever, I got back into that and I just haven't really been interested in video. I'll buy a video game occasionally on Steam and I got some coworkers who are always talking up the latest, greatest game and I just can't do it. Like I play it for 15, 20 minutes and I'm just like, I'm going to go paint or I'm going to go, you know, like.
I maybe something. Get a video game every 2 years or so, but this year we've got Cyberpunk, I think it's called 2077.
Yep.
Coming out. And then the Final Fantasy VII Remake. And both of those, I can't wait to try them. I got the bug.
I look all the time at video games and think, oh, that's perfect. I would have played that game for, you know, 38 hours a week, you know, back 10, 15 years ago. But yeah, so I mean, I see games all the time that I just know scratch a certain itch, but I just can't get it. I just don't have the time that I used to anymore. So,
well, you got 600 figures you're trying to paint from.
Yeah. You know, before we start, we were talking a little bit about, you know, some of the online platforms. So like, I'm going to just download a tabletop simulator. I want to play around with that a bit. And I've been running my weekly RPG game on Roll20, playing Forbidden Lands by Free League. So that's been a lot of fun, but also a big learning curve because I really haven't done much virtual tabletop gaming before.
Yeah. Roll20s, once you get everything set up, like in there and like there's a lot you have to do as the DM, I think. But
yep.
But
once that's what I'm gathering.
Going, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's definitely what I'm gathering. I mean, luckily, Forbidden Lands, the Mutineer Zero system is very, very simple, but it also is a game that desires you to not prep much. It just says, hey, kind of wing it. There's a lot of random tables, and you're just supposed to world build as you go. Mm-hmm. But Roll20 doesn't really play well with that. It kind of wants things prepped. So I'm trying to strike a balance with that, but I really like it. I mean, I've definitely gotten the hang of it over the past few weeks, and feel like I'm ready to move into some more of the advanced features. Like, you know, I really want to play with dynamic lighting and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty neat. And then I don't know if you made the same mistake that I did in Roll20 is that I put every token I could find. I instantly maxed out my free space just with every token.
Yeah, I was building a token library before I realized how ridiculous it probably was.
So. Well, have you discovered any new board games in the last few weeks?
No, not really. I'm trying to think. You know, being home here with young kids, we've just been playing Throw Burrito and Monopoly and, you know, just kind of the basic stuff that they're into.
That's cool. I mean, they're classics for a reason. I mean, I don't know about Throw Burrito, but, you know,
yeah,
it may not be a classic yet.
Not yet. But we've been doing that stuff and I've been thinking about maybe breaking out a couple of solo games, which I've never really done much of either. So, but I just haven't really. I was going to play, if you're Dark Light Memento Mori, it's like, it was a Kickstarter a few years ago. It's a very Warhammer Quest style.
The name sounds familiar.
Yeah. It's a gorgeous game, kind of oversized minis. I don't know what scale they are. But they're bigger than 32, but it's a total throwback to like the 90s version of Warhammer Quest, which is kind of like my favorite game of all time. So
does it still hold up?
Warhammer Quest?
Yeah.
I think it does in a certain way. It falls into what is affectionately termed Ameritrash style gaming, right? Just like die rolls after die rolls after die rolls of just random stuff happening to your character with little or no control.
I love the Silver Tower, you know, that's
good. Yeah.
I think it's a really, really good,
refresh. Blackstone Fortress is the other one that I wouldn't mind playing solo. But I mean, the thing I really loved about the old 90s Warhammer Quest is the campaign system. That's what Shadows of Brimstone, it's exactly the same game, just, you know, times 10 in terms of content. So I really enjoy that narrative arc that it sort of builds for you as you just let the dice fall where they fall. And I have a sweet spot for dungeon crawls for sure. Okay. And they don't necessarily have to be dungeons. They could be, you know, it could be Space Hulk. It could be pretty much anything.
Like, the map unfolds, you go through a series of encounters and get some loot.
Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely love it. That's kind of like my favorite style of game. And, Dark Light is up there in terms of like my most recently in games that pique my interest. And Alone is another one I'm really interested in trying out. I'm not really sure how many people can play that, but that looks good.
I can tell you what it sounds like.
Yeah. Well, it's you're like the final survivor of basically an alien style massacre, and you're trying to get out I think everybody play. It's the reverse, right? Instead of one GM and four players, it's four adversarial GMs trying to get the one last guy.
Oh, interesting.
So,
okay.
It looks really cool. I just kind of got the update pack for the Kickstarter for that. So definitely want to give that a shot too.
No, we're living in a good world for board games and stuff. I mean, this, I know with the advent of Kickstarter, it's a little bit easier to get your stuff out there to market. And with 3D printing and everything, it's a really good time. And then with all these things, there was a shift, you know, away from competitive play for a while to more cooperative play. And now, you know, there's solo play modes. I mean, basically find whatever you want out there.
Oh, yeah. It's an embarrassment of riches in terms of gaming. So, you know, and that's part of the thing that really bums me out about, you know, missing Adepticon is like, you know, I'll say it every year that the work leading up to the convention can break you. And, you know, leading into the weekend, you're spent and you're just like, I cannot wait for this to be over. I don't know if I really want to do this anymore. but then you get there and it's just the best time. And, you know, there's so many things we had, you know, kind of in the works, you know, like, oh, we're going to meet up and maybe we'll play Cthulhu Sunday night, or maybe we'll, you know, I was going to run a Shadows of Brimstone kind of game off the books for a lot of the hobby crews. So like Damon, who does all of our hobby seminars, mm-hmm. and Chris Bohr and Dave Powell's like, we're all going to get together and just, you know, for one night, kind of just sit down, unwind and play some Shadows of Brimstone. But, you know, so there's like a lot of things like that I was looking forward to. Plus, like, I always find something, you know, there that I'm like, oh, yeah, gotta have that. Like, last year it was the Monster Fight Club trees that they did. I think they were resin at Adepticon, but then they went into Kickstarter and they became plastic. So I bought a bunch of that stuff there for RPG gaming and stuff like that.
I miss it. I mean, it really is an experience. It's a full-on convention. It's the closest thing, like, for wargaming that we have to a convention. We're going to miss it, but I'm really looking forward, and it's going to make next year so much sweeter.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, there was a great community movement to kind of try to pick up the pieces that was left. So there were several kind of little online groups that had started up. Probably the biggest one was like the Adepticant group on Facebook that, you know, I think had close to 2,000 people in it at any given time. And they were trying to keep the spirit of, you know, some of the things we do at the convention alive, like the Armies on Parade style things, or getting some word out for support for, you know, the exhibitors who missed the event, who are trying to run some specials, you know, throughout the week to try to help them out, as well as a lot of the hobby seminar instructors who are running, you know, a lot of them started to run virtual classes and things like that. So, you know, that was just, in a very dark time. That was like the encouragement that was coming out of the community and the positive, you know, the messages we were receiving. You know, I think we finally found, you know, the secret to having a positive Facebook thread is, you know, just work on a convention for a year and then have it canceled due to a pandemic. Because the, you know, 98% of the, you know, comments on that were positive and, you know, in a good spirit, which is a miracle for the internet.
That's nice. So when the community can come together, you know, and agree, you know, we don't always do that. I mean, we're not always in opposition, but we don't always agree on things. You know,
sure.
It's part of the charm sometimes of talking about rules and whatever, but this is something that we can all rally behind.
Right. And, you know, I think it just goes to show that, like, you know, over the years of what Adepticon has been and what it was and, you know, like a lot, there was a very, very long period of time where we were running all sorts of stuff at Adepticon, but a lot of people who hadn't been or had only kind of heard about it secondhand still considered it like a, you know, oh, that's that Games Workshop tournament. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they only really saw it in a very kind of like limited field of vision. And, you know, over the years, I think, you know, as it's widened out and this in particular with the cancellation of the event, I think, you know, it's very apparent of what people consider. You know, we've all been recognized Adepticon as a social event. And really that's kind of like the most important aspect of the convention beyond any tournament or competition or painting competition or anything. It's getting together with your friends a lot that you only, you know, see once or twice a year, people, you know, online, getting face-to-face time, making those connections, and just having a blast. And like, I think the cancellation of this event has shown to me like just how important that connection and that gathering is for everyone. You know, it's because it's everybody. You know, it's from Bolt Action to 40K to, you know, to the Judgment players, to the Middle Earth players. Like, they're all just like, yeah, we want to come there and we want to do this, you know? And like, so like, I can't wait to do it next year. And so, and neither can we. So, I mean, we're, you know, the good news is we spent every single weekend for about 6 months working on terrain for various game systems. So we got to go. A head start for 21. Like, there's no excuses for us at this point.
I feel the same way about my army.
Yeah,
that I was gonna bring. I said, yeah. I got most of the way there.
Yeah. Well, you know, the procrastination. You got saved at the final buzzer there. So now you can retool it and bring it back better than ever. Right.
Exactly. So. Silver linings, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we'll, you know, we'll keep pushing. I mean, at this point, we'll continue on our terrain tear and, you know, work all that out and, you know, come back around to a lot of our larger partners like Games Workshop or Fantasy Flight or whoever that might be. And, you know, just kind of figure out what that looks like. Cause we were about to run three Worlds Championship events for Fantasy Flight and Legion, Imperial Assault and Armada. And now those, you know, didn't happen. So
they had people in their Golden Demon entries.
And Golden Demon. Yeah. I mean, there were invites out all around the world for that sort of stuff. Right. So, we can see like what's going to happen with those things. I mean, I know Games Workshop's already announced that the Golden Demon will come back in 21 to Adepticon. And, you know, they did some of their preview online, which I'm sure most people have watched, which, you know, that's another huge bummer because that Wednesday night preview, you know, was much grander, right? In the scheme of things in terms of presentation and what they had in store for reveal and stuff. So it's a total bummer that stuff didn't come to light this year because there was a lot of work went into that and it was exciting too. So
yeah, this is something that we're sharing as a whole world right now. You know, things changing, things not progressing or being what we necessarily thought it was going to be come Jan 1, and it's really been nice. We didn't touch on this book so much before, but the community reaction to all of this, what's it been like from your perspective?
I mean, outstanding. The amount of, I mean, just outside of just the amount of just positive messages, reinforcement, you know, the desire to come back to the convention, people supporting the exhibitors, people supporting the hobby instructors. You know, we're still in the middle of collecting all of the information we need to do refunds and stuff like that. But we made a plea to attendees, and that was like, if you're in a position to take cart credit, toward the 21 or the 22 event, we'd really appreciate that because that really helps us, you know, kind of make things settled and, you know, continue forward with the event. You know, if you're feeling very generous and you're in a position to donate like you did, then amazing. And for that, what we've done is we're going to set up this thing that we're calling the Ancient Order of Adepticon. So anyone who donates money to the convention, be it donation plus merchandise, or makes a direct donation through the PayPal donate link, will have the option to opt into this. It's not, you know, we'll send out another survey eventually, and you're going to be able to pick your own title and, you know, provide a link to your podcast or web store, whatever you want to do. And then we're going to do something for those people in 2021. You know, what exactly we'll do, I'm not entirely sure yet, but, you know, could be, you know, definitely something like probably a special badge and, you know, just some orders of recognition. A lot of it will depend on how many people we have in that group. You know, we're definitely going to do something, for them. And, you know, there's been a considerable number of people who have done that, which is just amazing. We'll have a good group going forward for that.
Man, that's awesome. So glad that you guys are able to plot a way forward. It's just nice knowing that you'll be there next year.
Yep, 100%. 100%.
So let me ask you, almost completely unrelated, what's been your favorite Shadow of a Brimstone miniature?
I had a really fun, there's a sand kraken. It's kind of like half coming out of the ground, bunch of tentacles coming out. That model was the first model I think I painted entirely with an airbrush. 90% with an airbrush. This is after taking Caleb Wissenbach's Dreadnought class, Dreadnought class. And just, I learned so much in that class that.
That's so good.
Yeah, him and Kat are just, I mean, they're fantastic. So they came out to the Adepticon staff party last summer and just did free classes for the staff. And I picked up a lot of stuff there. And then, you know, I'm always siphoning information off of like Damon Drescher and stuff too. You know, he probably gets tired of me asking him questions, but, but then I went and took his 2-day boot camp class down here in downtown Chicago where we did a Contemptor Dread. And I came out of there with just like an arsenal of knowledge, sat down, and that was the first model I applied that skill set to. So it has a special kind of place for me. I don't know if it's the greatest model in the world, but
well, your favorite, completely subjective.
Yeah, it was totally fun to paint, and it turned out great. And yeah, so it's every time I look at it, I'm like, yeah, all right, I like that one. So,
like, yeah, and, you got any like a victory lap planned when you're done?
When I finish this, there's a couple of guys on the Adepticon staff team who are into it too. So we're like, man, when this is over, this quarantine is over, we should, you know, just play for a week straight or something. Like, you know, I'll get as much painted as I possibly can before then. Cause you know, we only play with what's painted. That's the rule. So
you're significantly deep into that. You're almost on 400.
Nah, at this point, I at least one of every hero is done. I mean, there's not much we're going to miss out on. So yeah, I mean, I definitely, that's gotta happen when this is over. Like I gotta get at least half a dozen to 10 sessions in rapid succession.
Oh man. Well, it's always a pleasure to catch up with you, and again, glad you're weathering the storm as it were and safe and well. You know, I really look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Yeah. Hopefully we can start talking about 2021 sooner than later.
Awesome, man. Well, have a good rest of your night.
All right. You too. Thanks, Paul.
FTN is also on Facebook. Please like us at www.facebook.com/ForgeTheNarrative.
We are back. It is always fun to talk to Matthias. Really, really enjoyed it, hearing their perspective. And those guys went through a lot, like intestinal fortitude type conversations and decisions that, you know, I think we should respect, or I respect, and I won't put it out there for anybody else, but that I certainly respect.
Adepticon, I feel, was very much the forerunner. They were the first big domino to fall from all this, weren't they?
In our world, yeah, absolutely.
And now, yeah, of course, I can only speak from yeah. They were the first big domino to make the call to really set the stage that we're going to put health and we're going to put our communities ahead of our enjoyment and our pleasure. No matter what you say, what your opinions are on Adepticon and the people who run it, that was a big, big deal. And kudos to them for kind of leading the way on that.
And I'm going to, like, I couldn't imagine the stress of that. I mean, you know, I ran I think the biggest tournament we ever had was, what, 23, 25 people is the biggest tournament I've ever ran. And that's kind of stressful when you're trying to make sure everybody's having a good time and all this, and nobody leaves with a sour taste in their mouth or something. Trying to think about whether or not to pull the plug on something that massive and what the right decision is, that would be terrifying. You know, that's, you know, it's, people aren't running tournaments to get rich in the first place, you know? So it's definitely very scary to think about. It's, I'm glad I wasn't in the position. I agree with their decision, and, but they were very good at, like, just from, you know, not knowing him and not knowing, like, you know, the internal stuff, but just being an attendee who was looking at going and following everything on Facebook. They were very good at communicating, and they let people know, you know, how it was kind of unfolding. And I appreciated that. But when they finally did decide to cancel everything, you kind of knew it was coming, and they did a good job of easing us into the fact one of the biggest and most impressive events that we have here in the States wasn't going to happen. You know, they made it better.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. Took some stress off folks, but you know what? Got to paint a bunch of Blood Angels in the weeks up to it. You know, was in that tournament getting, you know, preparedness grind, pumped the brakes just a little bit, but I'm staring at some mostly painted, some tabletop ready Sanguinary Guard. I need to get all the way there.
Nice.
Isn't tabletop ready for Sanguinary Guard just getting a can of Retributor armor and...
And then just dipping with your selection of Reichland, CPL, or Agrax.
You guys aren't wrong. I can't really refute
that. Hey, I played Stormcast Eternals, so I know this method.
Yeah, with this, going back to using the extra time for hobby stuff, you know, it's almost like, man, what do? You almost paralysis by analysis, but I think that you just get in there and do something. If you're doing something, forwarding this, you know, it gives you a little bit something else to look forward to when we are able to convene and play at these large scales again.
I only paint when there's an event and I have that pressure. I have not had any pressure to paint, and I have backslid. So I have gone the exact wrong route. You have found more time to paint and have become way more productive. I downloaded City Skylines and I've been playing video games. Like, I was up till 7 a.m. the other night because I could not stop building a city on my computer. And like, so I've become the worst 40K hobbyist in the past 3 weeks. It's gone to complete garbage for me.
Well, you got to find something to get you back into it. So maybe us talking about it will get you there. Or maybe I'll put a Wrong Way Kid invitational just for you and I.
Yeah. We'll pre-screen. We'll do like a check. Let's see here. Where have you been in the past 2 weeks? That may need to happen. Something's got to happen just so I'll have some pressure to finish them.
We got to find something that you like too. I mean, is there something because I know you play Harlequins, right?
Oh my gosh.
I'm sure that there are some extra diamonds you could add to something.
That's the problem. I hate diamonds. Oh my gosh. They look so good. And having to paint diamonds is, I watched, you know, Duncan did a video back when the Harlequin Codex released on, hey, here's how he does diamonds. And I watched it. I was like, that looks so easy. I can do that. That's totally doable. That's attainable. And I did everything he did, except I didn't do it with skill. And it went so horribly wrong. And that's, I was like, I can't do this. Anybody that paints Harlequins well is a champ. Zeke Sudbury, I will give a shout out to as being a fantastic Harlequins painter. he has the patience of a saint to do that. I don't do it.
You got extra time to practice now that no one can see you do it either. Like,
no one could see me do it the last time, Paul, and about threw one across the table. Very frustrating.
You'll get there. You'll get there, my man.
I'm okay. I think it's no secret that G-Dub, the painting standard that G-Dub has been putting out on their media and on YouTube and stuff, the quality, unless they're painting like a showpiece, like unless like a Baden comes out, yeah? Everything they seem to put out, it seems to be for like the average painter, like for the basics, to get your stuff kind of to a decent tabletop quality or to just tabletop standard three color. You go back and watch some of the older ones. I remember one of the ones that stood out to me the most is Durthu. When Duncan painted the Durthu model, the Sylvaneth Durthu, I think this was using all the old paints, and he even has like an old paintbrush in his hand. But man, that painting one, you look, sit back and you're like, wow, this dude isn't just a pretty face. This guy has got some ridiculous talent. I watched him glazing up the Durthu's sword, and I was just like, I can't do that. I can't do that.
I felt that way when they did the Nagash one. Like, they are not messing around with this glaze.
No. Yeah. They're holding no punches here. Like, here, guys, we're going to paint it exactly like it looks on the box art. And this box art is ridiculously good. Congrats. Enjoy. See if you can follow along. And everyone follows along, and it's like... It's like you're trying to paint the Mona Lisa, but you've got all the talent of Picasso, but none of the imagination.
Yeah.
You said it with like oblong shapes and yeah.
That's actually, I think it's a Lovecraft quote that is, woe to dream the creator's dream without his finer skill of capture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the quote. And it's just like, yeah, that's it. No way of a chat. I can think it, but it's not making its way out yet.
See, I really like those though. I like looking at Siege, like just sometimes when I'm bored or I want to wind down after a day, I will just chuck on like one of my ace painters that I follow, and I'll sit there and watch them paint something. I'll be like, I have no chance of doing that.
Yeah,
but I like knowing that somebody else can. I like looking at it. I like having that goal in my head of being like, one day if I, you know, completely focus and dedicate myself, which I'm not going to do, I could almost maybe do something that good.
You just pick up little things though. You pick up one little thing from each video you watch, and then sooner or later, you're happier with your results.
And you talk about this all the time, Paul. You talk about adding it to your tool belt, just whip out this little, I remember that time I saw this guy use dry rice on his bases. I just made that up right now then, by the way, guys, but it sounds like something.
Because I was like, wait, do I have to look that up?
No, I don't know. I don't know if that's a thing. I just thought of it then. Because what came into my head, I'm looking at a cooking thing on Facebook, and so I had food in my head. And I remember the guy who put the Doritos on his base. Don't do that. All the cornflakes. Do not do that. Actually, no, stuff it. Do it.
But
if you want.
You just wake up one day.
Mice can get to them.
You're painting a squad or whatever, and you're like, man, I just painted the crap out of that pouch. That's the best looking pouch I've ever painted. And then you get to paint pouches better and differently for the rest of your life.
Yep. Or you find a color combination that you wouldn't think would work. Like you said, like bone and grain for orc skin. In your head, before you see that on the model, you're like, that shouldn't work. And then you look at it and you're like, holy, that absolutely works.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Use this time. I mean, I know not everyone else has the time. And I know that life is not different for some people. So for some people that it's probably even they find their time stretched even more. You know, my heart goes out to those folks. But for some of us that can have this extra couple hours or whatever, you know, put it into something positive.
Back on the Xenos, where we had I don't know if you guys have seen this come across your news feeds or whatever, but G-Dub announced in a comment, essentially, that Deathwatch and Harlequins, and I'm talking about Harlequins the most, will be getting their psychic awakening level update through a white dwarf. I don't know if anybody else caught that.
Yeah, I think that if you're not getting the white dwarfs now, or if you just haven't checked them out recently, you should check them out. I mean, maybe you don't jump in and grab a subscription, but make sure that you peruse them, because they are chock full of hobby stuff, rule stuff for every one of their games. I mean, that's one of the ways that they support every single one of their games.
Well, I did. Yeah, exactly right. And they keep giving you a little crumb, a little cookie, something to keep you interested, something to keep you. The taste buds going. But I remember we went through an interesting period where White Dwarf, I'm not going to say it wasn't worth buying, because I did buy quite a few of these, but I remember how White Dwarf was split into the Visions and the actual White Dwarf.
It was a difficult period White Dwarf.
It was it was an interesting transitional time.
Yeah.
It just was not
it was,
good.
It was this in the timeline of the 41st millennium, that was the Age of Strife, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. It was, Dwarf now has found... They have found that sweet spot. Remember, like before, it was it was expensive and it was huge and it was almost all ads. And then it went to, you know, that Age of Strife. But through that, we got, I think, the best iteration of White Dwarf ever. Like White Dwarf now is the best I've ever seen it in 20 years. I love it. I love it. The painting tutorials are actually thorough enough to follow. They're fantastic. There's a little bit of content in there for everybody, for every single game. If you don't play 40K, all right, cool. They got Lord of the Rings stuff. They got fantasy. They mentioned Necromunda and Titanicus and stuff in every issue now. It's fantastic. My only complaint about it is the fact that they're going to do this for Harlequins and who did we say the other ones? I'm sorry.
Watch.
Deathwatch.
The thing that The thing that I don't like is, remember when they did this for the Assassins and they sold out of that issue. And if you didn't have a subscription, or, you know, your shop owner didn't get you one held back, you were kind of out of luck. And so the only thing I don't like about that is how hard it is to find an issue once it sells out, or, you know, they don't really do back issues. They don't do.
Well, I mean, the good thing is you'll know it's coming. So buy that one.
Yeah.
If you got your site, if you choose, pick it up from your local store. If you so choose, I mean, you'll know it's coming.
Yeah. I'm same with Ricky. I'm not a huge fan of major rules releases in Y12. I love what they do generally, where they have a little, like they have a specialist scenario, or they have a little, maybe a preview of, or a special, or a single special character release. Like, you know, Lazarius, the Dark Angels guy, when he got released, we chuck him in Y12. Stuff like that's fine. It's a great idea. But when you get a major rules update to a codex, I wish they'd do more than just a Y12. I think the option, I don't mind them doing in the Y12, but I agree with Ricky. I wish they would do like a $10 PDF on GDub site. You can just buy all those rules, just bang, straight, put it straight into your tablet with the rest of your collection, and have that in there with everything else. Do they do that? I don't think they do.
I don't have the PDF. I mean, or at least you can get it a digital download. I think a book would be great, but at the same time, people also find a little bit of umbrage of having to pay for a book that's $35-$50 or whatever. You're going to get this for $8.
Yeah. Well, no matter how you go, no matter what route you go with, it's not going to be the perfect thing for everybody. You know, somebody's going to want this, somebody else is going to want that. What I would love to see, though, and not just for the rules, but just for the fun of it, I would love if GW would digitize old White Dwarves and let us go in and like put them on a website. I understand that they have to monetize and they have to make their money. They're a business. I get that. But like, let's be honest, like, 10-year-old White Dwarf issues probably aren't bringing a lot of money, but how great would it be if they had a website where we could go back and look at these like old antique editions and see how the game was back then? Because it's so neat when you see all these old armies and all the old stuff from, like, you know, when we were kids playing this. It's kind of neat to go back and see that and how much the hobby has changed, how much the game has changed.
You want to talk about something cool? A lot of those dioramas are in Warhammer World, so it's a real treat if you can ever make it there and go through the exhibit. And seeing some of those things that were, I mean, literally awe-inspiring the first time you saw them in that magazine.
Yeah.
I'll take you down a little trip down young Adam memory lane for a sec. You just sparked a little bit of nostalgia for me there, Ricky. So when I mentioned before, I played again. I can't remember if it's on the cast or not, on the pre-show. But I jumped in for a couple of months to 40K, about 6 months when I was about 13, 14. And then I realized girls didn't like 40K. Then I didn't like it either. So I don't know how that works, but that's how it worked.
Weird.
But I know, strange. And the reason I got back into it is because I stumbled across a White Dwarf at my local library, because my library stocked White Dwarfs. And I read one. Yeah, it was really weird. They were kind of like a half news agency, half White Dwarf, if you guys know
that's
what that
cool.
is, a half library. They had a White Dwarf. And I cracked it open because I was bored, and I think my mum dragged me there because she was doing something. And I cracked it open and felt this battle report between Crimson Fists and Tyranids. And it was the sickest, most awesome freaking thing I'd ever read up until that point in my life. There was this, like, and the thing ended, and you kind of take a bit of credit. I assume they took a bit of creative license with this, because the last paragraph of the last thing was this Power Sword Stormbolter Terminator. I think that you got probably a lot of people know the model, Captain facing down his Hive Tyrant. And there were like, there was maybe some rippers and some bits and pieces left, but this is pretty much it. And there was this epic paragraph at the end that just captured the imagination. And I went out and I bought that Captain, and my art teacher at the time played 40K, and he was an incredible painter. I remember I was so keen on it and so into it, and he used that to inspire me to start painting. He said, okay, I'll teach you some bits and pieces of how to paint. And I got better scores in art because I read a White Dwarf, essentially, because that enabled me to connect with my teacher, and my teacher to inspire me to actually try and be creative and use my creative outlet.
There's a couple of heroes.
He painted that. He painted that Space Marines cap for me. I've still got it, and it's still one of the better things I've ever, one of the better things I own painted wise. I'll send you a picture, Paul, and you can chuck it up somewhere.
I will,
because that was a fantastic story, and I love that I have that memory and that evocatism, all because of a white dwarf. I went from getting C's to getting A's in art in high school because I read a white dwarf.
No, so two years we got your teacher and the librarian. Let's give it up.
Nice.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
I like it.
Man, this has been a nice little jaunt around the hobby, going from, you know, whatever. Again, this is how I'm spending my time, thinking about Warhammer, thinking about it more than I'm playing it right now, and that may be the same for lots of folks, and doing some painting and stuff.
Yeah, man. Interesting time. It's interesting time for the hobby, but I think that a lot of positives can come out of such a negative thing.
Yeah, well, you know, if you guys had not checked out, that we did a live show before we did this recording. So if you came in and saw that, thanks for tuning in. If you didn't catch it because, well, one, we didn't tell anybody we were doing it. We just went live to see if we can get some of the technology right.
Because all of our previous attempts have been such home runs like that. We just felt like, nah, just cold open. Don't need to tell anybody, because this one is going to have no disasters.
Yeah,
we avoided disasters this time. So I think that we've almost got it. Next week, we'll announce when we're going to do it. And so if that's something that you're interested in, make sure that you either check us out on Facebook, or I'll try to put it in a post on the FTN website, forgethenarrative.net, that is coming out. And maybe I'll tweet about it or whatever. And join us next week for a really cool discussion. The folks that did, we had a really interactive discussion to help, feed what we ended up talking about on this show. So it's all going to come together.
My favorite part is that, you know, when I get the comments of, I didn't know that's what Ricky looked like. Yes, I'm shocked that that's what I look like as well. So I'm with you.
Adam, Ricky, y'all have a good rest of y'all's night, and we will talk again next week.
All right. We'll do. Merry Easter to everybody out there. It's actually Good Friday right now in Land of Tomorrow for you guys. Yeah, happy Easter. Happy holidays, everybody. Hopefully you can connect with family as much as you can, and catch us on the next one. Thanks for having me, Paul.
We'll see you.
Make my day.